Hello, welcome to Outside In. My name's John Burns, and on today's show we have a man who has been described as one of the most knowledgeable outdoor writers out there. I'm going to talk to him specifically about his new book, which is Walking Class Heroes, which follows the great events that for the walking public that surrounded the Kinder Trespass. And that's an event, as anyone who's been to one of my book signings will know, is close to my heart, because it was kind of a battle really that sort of established the rights of working people to actually walk on the land and really sort of gave us the beginning of the kind of access rights that we certainly now enjoy in Scotland. So my guest today is a writer, an editor, a media consultant. He's the vice president of the Outdoor Writers and Photographers Guild, a member of the British Guild of Travel Writers, and I think he's written over 90 outdoors books. So my guest, hello, Rowley Smith.
Hello, John. Good to speak to you.
Good. Nice to have you on. Tell me, how did you begin to get into the outdoors? Because you've obviously written a great deal and explored it, but where did it all start for you?
Well, I'm a native of East Anglia, believe it or not, although I spent most of my working life in the hills, which is where I feel most at home. I was born in East Anglia, and my mum and dad used to take us for countryside walks and that sort of thing, and I'm a country boy. You know, I come from a village in North Essex, mm-hmm. very close to the Suffolk border.
Right.
So I'm a country boy, but I became a journalist, and that took me all around the country working various daily newspapers in Coventry and Birmingham and places like that. But even when I was a journalist, and that is my profession, really, that's the reason probably I've written so many books, because I write quite fast. And my interest in access matters, and that's really what the book's about.
Yeah.
These are all, it's not just about the trespass, it's about what went on before. And I became interested in that when I heard about a celebration, I think it was the 50th anniversary of the mass trespass on Kinder Scout.
Can you tell us, there'll be people listening who perhaps don't know have never heard of the Kinder Trespass. Tell us very briefly what it was.
Yeah, well, it all goes really way back to the Enclosure Acts of the 18th, 19th century, when what was once common land, mm-hmm. and able to be used by anybody, was enclosed by Act of Parliament at various places all around the country.
Right.
And that's when the moors of Kinder Scout, the highest point in the Peak District, was enclosed, and the signs went up, trespassers will be prosecuted.
Right.
And although the lads and lasses from the big industrial cities that surround the Peak District, like Manchester and Sheffield, they could actually see these beautiful, blue, inviting moors from their places of work and from their homes, but they weren't allowed to walk on them. So in 1932, a group called the British Workers' Sports Federation decided if there were enough of us, they couldn't stop us walking on these moors. So they're organised by a chap who I was honoured to know as a friend, a chap called Benny Rothman. They organised what was called a mass trespass,
right.
On Kinder Scout. And it's all very well organised. They didn't want any violence or anything like that, but they trespassed from the western side, from Hayfield, onto Kinder Scout, and they were met by a group of gamekeepers. They knew they would be,
mm-hmm.
and there were a few scuffles, and they went on to meet up with another group who'd come over from the Sheffield
yes.
side of
yeah.
the mountain.
Yeah.
But when they came back into Hayfield,
yes.
Six of them were actually arrested and eventually tried, and five of them were actually sent to prison.
Yes.
For walking on the moors. Now, that always struck a chord with me. How could that happen? You know, that is ridiculous.
Well, could we maybe try and set it in a bit of context, really? Because I think it's important to try and understand this took place in 1932, didn't it? Right in
yes.
the heart of of the Depression. It was after the First World War, and the First World War had, if you like, blown away the a lot of the traditional sort of class values. You know, it changed. Nothing was ever the same after the First World War. And I when I looked at it, I thought, well, there was a number of things happening here, because the landed gentry, the rich folk who owned places, you know, I think they'd never experienced so many folk wanting to walk. Because do you think the fact that, you know, the railways were developing, the people had paid holidays for the first time, do you think that was an influence on it?
Absolutely, yes. All those things contributed to the sense of frustration that people felt that they weren't allowed to walk on these beautiful places. And that's what led to the mass trespass and several others after it. In fact, you know, it went on for many years before we got the Countryside and Rights of Way Act in the year 2000, which at least gave us access to mountain and moorland. But the fight goes on. We still haven't got access to woodland. We still haven't got the wonderful rights of access that you've got up there in Scotland. And that's what a few of us down here are still campaigning for. So you've got the best access legislation in the world up there, and we want that, and we want the same rights that our friends and cousins in Europe have got. They've got this, what they call Ollamonstraten, which means the right to walk wherever you want, you know, subject to common sense restrictions. So really, it's a long-running battle, and all those things that you mentioned, John, contributed to it. But the mass trespass brought things to a head, and the imprisonment of five of these young lads from Manchester, ramblers from Manchester Way, as Ewan McColl had it.
That's a song, isn't it? Manchester Rambler, isn't it?
That's it. I help organise every year a celebration of the trespass, which we call the Spirit of Kinder Day. And at the end of, we have various speakers, and some of those are mentioned in the book, that come along and talk about, you know, we still haven't got rights that you've got north of the border or they've got in Europe.
The fight goes on
as far as we're concerned. But at the end of every one of these events, we always sing the Manchester Rambler.
Of course. Yes.
You and McColl claimed to be on the mass trespass in 1932.
Did you really? I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, he was a walker in his time.
Right, okay.
But having said that, I got to know Benny Rothman quite well, and he said he couldn't remember him there. But anyway, many people, including another person, another one of my heroes that I mentioned in the book, Tom Stevenson, the man who came up with the Pennine Way.
Right.
He never agreed with the trespass, and he never saw eye to eye with Benny. Although they had the same objectives, they went about it in different ways.
Yes. I mean, I think it's you know, I suppose sitting up here in Scotland, having the access rights that we have, I think it's easy to forget that actually the I suppose the coming to a state of affairs where the common man, where the public have got right to an ability to walk in mountainous and wild places is actually a pretty modern thing. Because I think if you were to go back, say, 150 years, or perhaps even a little bit more than that, the only people who explored mountainous areas were actually upper classes who had to do it. They had the leisure time to do it. Because most people were working too bloody hard anyway. And most people didn't have the financial ability to actually get out. And you know, the transport wasn't there. The, you know, and the leisure time wasn't there. I suppose, but I think you made quite an important point, though, when you said that it was probably the rise of the industrial towns, places like Manchester, Salford, Sheffield, Leeds, and all these places were pretty much within sight of the Derbyshire Hills, the Pennines, which must have I suppose inspired what was in those days certainly a very radical movement. Is that right? You think that's right?
Oh, it was very radical. It was the the members of the British Workers' Sports Federation who organised the first mass trespass were all members of the Young Communists.
Yes.
And that's always riled some people. Some people still can't accept that, but it is very much a left, it's always been a left-wing movement.
Yes,
and
yes.
And I think it always will be, because why shouldn't anybody have rights to walk on a mountain? Nobody can own the mountain any more than the deep ocean bed, as Ewan McCall's song says. You know, so I think it's always been there, and it's very much been a class thing, which is where the title of the book comes from, of course.
Walking class hero, yeah.
Instead of John Lennon's working class heroes, these are walking class heroes, and they are all heroes of mine, as I say.
Yeah,
I was very privileged to know quite a few of them,
do. What was Benny like? Because he was a little fella, Benny Rothman, wasn't he?
Yeah, 5'3". In his size 7 boots. He was an incredible little character, and I got to know him pretty well in his latter years, and I actually walked with him on the trespass route with his wife Lily in the 70s.
Amazing.
And he was over 70 himself then, and he was walking like a train. I couldn't keep up with him. He's got incredible little character, but he never ever, all the years I knew him, never pushed his politics at me. So, you know, he was more interested in the rights of everybody to have this stolen right taken from them after the Enclosure Acts. And it all starts, the book starts with the man who really first fulminated against the Enclosure movement, and that was the Northamptonshire poet John Clare.
Oh,
and
wow.
he was the first one really to point out what was happening.
Uh-huh.
And the places where he could walk were suddenly enclosed, and these signs went up, trespassers will be prosecuted. The ramblers like myself call them wooden liars, because you cannot be prosecuted for trespass.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just not true. And then it was carried on by people like up in Scotland. Scotland led the way in many ways. And my old friend Rennie McCowan was very instrumental in the Scottish Land Reform Act, in getting the rights that you've got there. And before him, Percy Unna, as a person probably a lot of people have never heard of, but the Unna rules, he was an industrious and a benefactor to the National Trust for Scotland, gave them huge areas of land, including Glencoe and places like that. But he set up these rules that said that the land should not be improved in any way, and you shouldn't build anything on it, for example, but also not improve the footpaths. And those rules really have not always been abided by. There have been instances where they have been broken. But he set down the rules that, that many of us still think are correct.
Yeah, I mean, that's a complicated issue in a way, because I think, you know, I mean, the Cairngorm National Park's a good example, because the Cairngorm National Park was set up initially to preserve the Cairngorm. In the way that they were, and I can't remember, I don't know exactly when it was set up, maybe 30 years ago or something, but ideologies are changing, because obviously the Cairngorms that we have are largely deforested and desolate areas, really, and so actually, you know, do we really want to conserve them as what they are, or do we want to develop them into something, in my view, better?
Yeah, it's a subject you could argue about for ages. You know, we say leave it as it is, but that's how it is now.
Yeah.
What was it like 20 years ago, even 100,000 years ago, when most of our uplands were forested? You know, there were trees on them.
Yeah.
You still find stumps of trees emerging out of the peat on Kinder Scout, for example.
Well, Kinder Scout's a good example, because Kinder Scout, if anyone's been to Kinder Scout, it's effectively a raised plateau, isn't it? I always think of it as Kinder Scout. It looks like someone's taken a mountain and cut the top off. And if you wander across Kinder Scout, as I did many years ago, starting out the Pennine Way, in the early years of the Pennine Way, me and my mate walked it, and most of the time, because the path had been designed across the top of Kinder Scout. But what hadn't been done was any pathwork to maintain the path. No. So only a few years, it must have been about 5 or 6 years after the Pennine Way was actually opened, me and a mate did it, and we were walking through this black soup that was the peat, which was a pretty unpleasant experience, I have to say. But as you so rightly say, if you were to dig down into that peat, you would find the stumps of the old forest still there.
Yes. Well, the landscape has always changed, hasn't it, John?
Yes.
You know, over centuries, it always will. And climate change has made a difference, and all sorts of things have a huge effect on it. But Kinder Scout is it's very close to my heart for many reasons, but a lot to do with the trespass and what happened there.
Yes.
But it's strange. It's a strange place. Many, you either love it or you hate it. And many people, it sounds like you're one of them, many people really hate it because it's a peat bog, basically.
It is. I wouldn't say I hate it. It's got its... I've been up there many times because I used to live in Sheffield myself. And,
right.
So I've wandered Kinder Scout in lots of different kinds of weather, from blizzards to mists, and it does have a particularly in the mist, it has a peculiar wild quality about it, I think.
Yeah, it has a spiritual effect on a lot of people actually, and some of whom featured in the book. Terry Howard, for example, is a good friend of mine and a fellow member of a group called SCAM. Which stands for Sheffield Campaign for Access to Moorland.
Oh, right.
And they were professional trespassers.
Right.
They went out and trespassed every weekend, told the landowner they were coming.
Right.
And just reasserting their rights to walk on the moors. And Terry regards Kinder as a very spiritual place. And a lot of people do, not just because it's the highest point of the Peak District, but because of the aura of spirituality about it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you walk, the best walk on Kinder is to walk around the edges.
Yes.
And we have these incredible rock formations.
That's right.
For example, with Woolpacks on the southern edge, it's like walking into a Henry Moore sculpture park.
Yeah, these are
amazing.
Just to describe it, these are great boulders that effectively, if I'm right in thinking, then they sort of sit proud of the peat and have been eroded, I guess, for hundreds of years by the wind into
right.
strange shapes, you know?
That's and right. Then, these weird shapes. Yeah. I remember taking a good friend of mine, John Clear, who's a very famous mountain photographer.
Oh, yeah.
And he'd never been on Kinder. He'd been on Everest and all over the place. He'd never been on Kinder. And I took him up there one misty autumnal day, and it got to the Woolpacks, and he said his mind was blown. It was just incredible, these really weird, surreal shapes emerging out of the mist.
Yeah,
it's one of my favourite places on Earth, actually. I just love it because there's so many shapes there. And it's all, as you say, erosion by wind, rain, ice, snow over the centuries.
Yeah. To tell me, so I understand, I'm interested by the fact that you celebrate have an annual celebration about the trespass. Now, is it true that, and you may even have been there, I don't know if it's a legend or not, that at one such celebration, was it the grandson of the, I'm struggling
great,
to remember.
Great-grandson.
Great-grandson of the Earl of...
Duke of Devonshire.
Duke of Devonshire, that's what
I... It's the 11th Duke of Devonshire. I actually organised that event.
I thought you might.
And before the start of it, I'd done the various features for various newspapers. And I spoke to the Duke and did a feature in The Guardian, actually.
Right.
And he said in that feature that he liked to apologise for the actions of landowners, including his great-great-grandfather,
right.
For the actions they took in 1932. Now, I that was published. And just about a week before the event, he rang me, says the 11th Duke, Andrew, the 11th Duke.
Right, right.
He was a great walker, by the way. He'd done the Pennine Way.
Oh,
he'd
right.
done the Lightweight Walk. He was a real keen walker.
Okay.
And a real gentleman. And he rang me and said, when's this event? I said, well, it's next week. He said, well, I'd like to come along. I said, are you sure? I said, there'll be a lot of ramblers there. He said, yeah. He said, I really want to come. And he came along and he stole the show.
Very
he just
good.
He was so gracious, you know, and he did what he said. He said, "I'd like to apologise for the actions of landowners like my great grandfather in the 1930s," and it really hit the headlines, obviously. But the most moving things about that day was you all heard of Jim Perrin? He's another one of my heroes in the book. Quite a left-wing activist in the countryside and a brilliant writer on the countryside. And Jim was another of speakers. And Jim was a good friend of Benny and a fellow communist. And the Duke got up to speak. And he, as I say, it was a brilliant, very statesman-like speech. And at the end, he sat down and Jim walked across the stage and shook the Duke's hand. And I thought that was so moving because they were opposite in so many ways.
Yeah.
But it was such a moving event. And that was one of the best ones we've had. That was held at Bowden Bridge in Hayfield, where the Kinder Scout trespass started out from.
Right, okay. Yeah. I mean, it's a great thing. It's a great thing to remember. But in some ways, the great tragedy, in a way, is that we are still engaged, or certainly in England, folk are still engaged in that struggle to get the right to roam.
Yeah. Well, the fight goes on, as I say, John. We're still campaigning. We will keep campaigning. There are modern day campaigners like Kate Ashbrook, one of my heroes in the book, Marion Shoard, another one. John Bainbridge, who's now up in the Lake District, but was a great campaigner in Dartmoor.
Right.
We're still campaigning. Don't worry, it goes on, and we won't let it rest, because the sacrifice made by those young lads in 1932 should never be forgotten. And me and a few others are determined that that will never happen.
Well, that was absolutely fascinating talking to you, and you know, I really hope you continue to commemorate this great sort of battle for access that took place, and so your book The Working Class Hero is available now on Amazon, and I think it sounds like a really fascinating read. Thanks for talking to me, Rolly Smith, and I wish more power to your efforts to get access granted. Thanks very much for talking to me.
Thanks a lot, John. Good to talk to you.